Good morning. Thank you very much for the invitation, both Michelle and Tash, for asking me to talk this morning about research. Now, I'm not going to give an authoritative account of how to, step by step, how to get involved in research. I'm going to give you a bit of a personal experience and background around how it seems that I've changed. I'm no longer just a clinician, which is where I firmly stood for a long time. Now, I used to see research as something that other people did, very interesting, but no thanks. So I find myself in transition, so I guess it's an opportunity just to talk about some of those things. One of the things you do have to know about is how to get a logo onto a slide. And I'm getting very good at it, where to steal them from and so on. I'll just explain those multiple logos. I'm from Prince of Wales Hospital. I'm a senior therapist with the memory clinic, but I'm on leave without pay at the moment. Working backwards, as we often do, the Collaborative Research Centre is where I was successful in getting funding for the scholarship. So I'm doing a full-time PhD, and I swore I'd never go back to Sydney University. I guess moral of that story is don't swear. I'm back at Sydney University at Cumberland Campus doing my PhD. And my most recent acquisition of the CPAR logo, and I'm a student affiliate of CPAR, which is an ARC Centre of Excellence in Population Ageing Research. And that was just last week, so I'm yet to find out the ramifications of that one. I think the first thing is just have a look around. Clearly there's a lot happening. Today's program is an amazing testimony to that. And I think there are many allied health people involved in research. But I think that it's important that we look beside us in our teams, that there are people who are doing things. And one of my earliest experiences is watching someone at Prince Henry engage in clinical research. And those are the sorts of experiences that I think that stay with you. So it is happening around you. You've just got to find it and watch. I think that getting involved in discussion, seeing some of the skills that are involved and looking at those people as role models. Certainly in my current clinical team, I have been extremely lucky in having some brilliant role models who can walk that line between being clinicians and being researchers of both of an extremely high calibre. And so those are the sorts of skills that you notice and learn if you look around. I think that if you can absorb an open-mindedness and value the research that's been done, I know that sometimes clinical teams can look at research teams and say, well, they're not really that relevant and they're just the researchers. But the impact that it has on our day-to-day clinical practice is significant. So I think that just being open to that idea in itself can make a difference to how you perceive things. Now, Michelle's already talked about talking to colleagues and joining networks. I really think that that's something that is crucial to getting involved. If you're not going to conduct research and become a researcher, you still need to be aware of research and know what evidence exists. So sharing ideas. And one of the things is having... It might mean that you have to go to the odd meeting or two more, but what you can do is find like-minded people who may be part of the research network in the end. You might not start off being part of a research network, but that's how it turns out to be. And that's really how I got involved in some of the more formal research that I've been doing, is that it started off just with some clinicians who were trying to talk about and work out solutions to a clinical problem. So I think that research, as you know, obviously the fact that there's a forum such as today, there's another one later in the year out at Liverpool, I think, in the Western area, for allied health. So I think that obviously research is becoming more important. And what we do need to know is look at what the gaps are, because there are gaps. And they're quite surprising. You know, has music ever been investigated? Well, in 2008, formally has been investigated. The second point, do OT home visits make a difference to outcomes? I think that's a very interesting problem, because we all do our home visits, but where's the evidence to suggest that it's effective? Well, currently there's a study underway to help resolve that gap. And, you know, the third point, it seems obvious, and sometimes clinical problems do seem obvious, but we really need to think about whether or not there's evidence to support those obvious conclusions that we make on a day-to-day basis. And that third study was investigated in 2009, and really what they came up with was eating less helps this way. So if you're thinking about doing some research, please don't worry about the R word and put it in a box and sit and look at it and worry. I think that you forget about that, you just ignore it. Taking on a minor role can make a difference, so that you might take on some part-time work, because there are part-time opportunities as a research assistant, just to see what it's like. Because it is quite, if you're going into a formal research role, then it is quite different to clinical role. And there are pros and cons to both of those things. Or you might take on the role of an interventionist and not necessarily direct the study, but be one of the people offering intervention to clients. I think a big issue is knowing about how to do it. And we can get very hung up on this thing of, well, I don't have the skills, I don't know how to do it. I think that we all have skills that we don't know we've got until we try. And one of the issues with research is that the process and the skills both evolve. You don't have to know everything before you start. In fact, if you did, you might not do it in the first place. But the fact that you're engaging in the research gives you the chance to develop the skills. So I've got skills now that I never thought I'd have, but it's because of getting involved. And resources, talking about the R word, there are many resources, and talking about skills that I never thought I'd had. That book, Discovering Statistics Using SPSS, would I be someone that tells you about a stats book? Never. Never in a million years. But you know, things happen. You take on these things as you need to, and that particular resource is excellent. It's an idiot's guide, really. And you know, that's one of the things that's changed. It's a great time to start doing research now, because resources have changed in their language as well. There's another great textbook that talks about how to read research papers. So just, it's written in a very straightforward sort of manner, so you don't have to do too much interpretation. It explains it as you go. So there are lots of resources. The ACI talks about them. There are websites. There's the usual Joanna Briggs, Cochrane, and all that sort of information that you can access. Textbooks, as I said, that other one, the Handbook for Allied Health Research, is quite good at giving you an overview of what's involved, and that's cheap. That's only $35. So you can get in, as in libraries as well, so you can get the gist of how you might go about things. And there are pots of money around that you can access. So it's worth, once you start looking for money, you can find it in places. I think that being alert and not alarmed refers to just keeping your ideas in mind. Keeping them in the back of your head, formulating how you might do things so it's on the back burner, and look for those opportunities. And if they're not coming out and jumping up at you, then you might need to think about how you can create them. For example, next time your job description is written or you're having a PEDS review, write into it some research component or some sort of skill that you might be looking for, because that's an opportunity. We don't have to necessarily stick to the black and white rules, and I think that's part of the process of research, is just looking for opportunities that are slightly outside the box a bit. Take opportunities to write up a pilot project. If you're looking at an idea, if you've got a clinical problem that you're thinking might be worth investigating a bit, then start putting it on paper. How are you going to do it? Thinking about the structure of your investigation. And also work out how to negotiate the system, which is partly where the PEDS discussion or the job interview, you might ask about the research component. you can negotiate the system. So starting small and even just reflecting on what you might do, start using the measurement tools, the outcome measures that you might be looking at using, because before you get into formal research, it's always good to have some idea of what your measurement tools are going to be like and whether they're robust and whether how they work clinically if you're looking at clinical research. So it's an opportunity before you get really involved to do some piloting. I think it's also important to start recording those observations and be systematic, and from that you've got some good information to start moving on and being more formal. And looking for small pots of money to get started. You don't need a lot of funding to get started. There's things like the Heart Foundation, some scholarships grants of around $2,000, and there's little, once you start looking, there are small little pockets, fragmented in how you do it, but there's money available. And using alerts, to go back to being alerted, you can get alerts coming into your inbox, and now these are just some examples. You don't even have to go looking. Sign up to these things and they'll just drop into your email without trying. You can tailor these so that you can get weekly updates, daily, whatever frequency you like. You can tailor them to your specific clinical field of interest. The Allied Health Centre of Evidence has an Allied Health News and Review where research is updated every month and it's reviewed. The dementia ones obviously are an area of interest for me, but you can look for those sort of things in your own field. Now this slide just demonstrates, I guess, my role change. I'm sorry, you're not meant to read that, it's just an example of how things have changed. So starting from the left on the poster that I presented at the ASSBI conference in 2008, and this this was when I first started looking at Memory Clinic and using the Allen's model to investigate early functional impairment and early memory loss. So I started recording that. I had a lot of observations, put them into a paper, and it showed that, number one, I had no funding, but number two, I also had little idea. The stats involved in that paper were done by Katrine, who is a research assistant, and she and I worked on that paper together. So it just goes to show that, you know, with support, you don't have to do it all alone. So find your network. The next study with the exercise program was a pilot that we ran. The doctors in my clinical team were interested in exercise and depression. So we started off and got a little bit of funding from the Area Health Service to run a pilot, which I conducted, and then we got funding from DVA, which was then run on a larger scale and is currently being written up. The next slide on falls prevention for people with dementia is the pilot that came out of those discussions that I talked about when I'd met with people for around a year. We started talking about how to approach this issue of falls, the fact that there's no evidence for people with dementia on falls prevention. So we got some money from Alzheimer's Australia there. And finally, the last slide is what I'm doing at the moment. I'm looking at a sub-study with the Sydney Memory and Ageing Study and looking at how functional cognition and everyday performance in older people are related. I think that the main thing is to see that it's a transition. I think that it's not something that you do overnight. It's taken probably 20 years in the coming for me, but other people are a bit quicker than that. But Anne Cusick is an occupational therapist who's done a lot of research on why particularly occupational therapists don't do research. And it talks about the language that we need to say that we're becoming a researcher rather than doing research, and I think that there's a subtle difference in that expression, that we can become researchers, and we need to even if we're not conducting research. So becoming a researcher and having that focus of understanding what it's about. Opportunities do exist. Sometimes it does seem like extra work, but might mean you go to a meeting and you've got a bit more of a juggle on your plate, but it also does have its own rewards, which I'll talk to you about a bit later. And I think that not being too worried about where it's going to go is also worth considering. Once you've decided that you're going to look into something and investigate something more thoroughly, set up your support networks. Two heads are definitely better than one, and my supervisors don't actually look like that, but I do have three supervisors with thanks to Fluffy, Hagrid's dog. What's in it for me? I guess what it does for me is create space in my career for wanting to just move away from providing service delivery role only. And probably after a long time in the health business, it's an opportunity to step back and look at the big picture. Similarly to the role that joining the Allied Health Subgroup provides in influencing decisions and how health is delivered, that the Allied Health Network, the subgroup as part of the aged care network, part of the ACI, it has that role as well. So getting involved, you can do that in two ways. One is to do some research and another is to look at service delivery. But it just gives a little bit more space. And while it seems, it can seem quite self-indulgent at times, but sometimes we have to, I think, be self-indulgent because we're so used to saying yes to lots of service demands. And so saying no to service demands and saying, right, I'm stepping back for some time to look at what I'm doing and how is in itself a good thing. I think it strengthens clinical knowledge and it certainly helps with your clinical confidence. Allows for creativity, autonomy with time, very small flexibility, which can be family friendly, and I won't mention the travel word because that comes into it and it's an opportunity as well. And I figure that change is always on the agenda, so why not be master of it? So I think that every man should skin his own skunk. Now this phrase has origins in early colonisation of America when settlers were sort of setting up shop in Jamestown, and they came across the native skunk, and their furs were prized for their distinctive visuals, not necessarily the aromatics. So obtaining the fur was not pleasant, and basically everyone did their own dirty work. So I would suggest that everyone takes responsibility, which is what the phrase has come to represent, and follows up and takes this day as a beginning point to start your own thought processes along the research track. Certainly nothing ventured, nothing gained. It's time. Things have changed with time. And if you start looking at research now, it's a whole lot different to what it was 20 years ago. And it's a whole lot easier. It's just incredible, the changes and the access that you can get to information. So I think that research is more clinically relevant than ever. It can be difficult to do, but it's certainly worth it in the long run. And there are lots of supports along the way, so I guess it's over to you to work out how you're going to use that and how you're going to construct it. And finally, I want you just to be aware of the Dementia Research Conference, which is compulsory for me to advertise, but many of you might find that interesting. But I think that's the sum of the process for me so far. Thank you.